Blog Talk Radio.
Happy New Year. It's Ayana Iseline with Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? Tonight's Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. What will the future be? What to expect for this upcoming new year? 2019 projections, outcomes, consequences.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police as the army of occupation have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds, as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Sister Betty would like to make a further announcement. Sister Betty.
Happy New Year, I hope. And once again, we are back with Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And I want to start off the program the way we ended it last week, when we had a discussion about what is liberation theology. And I would like to give you an example of someone who devoted their life to the concept of liberation theology. The philosopher Gutierrez from Latin America said, "It is not the church's job to pray and say God will take care of it." I'm paraphrasing. "It is our job to get out here and be the salvation or the liberators that we've been waiting for." And this afternoon, a warrior left us. His name was Nicholas Hayward, and he was a man who practiced liberation theology. He was a good Christian, but when they killed his 13-year-old son in 1994 in the housing projects where they lived, he fought them, and he never stopped fighting them. And he not only fought for them, he fought relentlessly for justice for all of the victims of police violence. He was an advocate and a strong proponent of preventing the stolen lives. And I think it is important that we acknowledge and recognize that we have lost a great warrior, this father of four, Nicholas Hayward, who was buried this morning. And we should all say for this year, those of us who claim to have any kind of philosophy of religion, that it is time they know us through our works, that faith without works is nothing. So again, we say, Nicholas Hayward presente. And before I leave, I want to remind you that a major decision was passed down regarding our brother warrior, Mumia Abu-Jamal. More will be discussed about that further in the broadcast. However, in New York, we are having a Mumia special report update at the People's Forum on Saturday, January the 12th at 3 p.m. And the People's Forum is on 37th Street between 7th and 8th Avenue, 320 West 37th Street. And last but not least, we want to acknowledge that one of our brother poets will be performing on January 13th, that's Sunday, at the Bowery Poetry Club, 308 Bowery, New York City, at 3 p.m., and the admission is $10. We're referring to Brother Raymond Nat Turner, and it's called 360 Degrees of Straight Liftoff. And some of the poets will be Bob Holman, William Parker, and William Hooker. So this weekend, you have a lot to do. And without further ado, we will return to our program. Brother Ralph?
Yes, there is so much to talk about for the new year. And one of the things this show does is we show constant support for our resistance forces, the Black Liberation Army, Black Panther Party, Weather Underground, May 19th, and I could go on and on and on, the Ohio 7th. And I'm thinking, and I don't want to start naming names because I will be here till tomorrow night. Naming the people we have forgotten, we must act on freeing all of our political prisoners. And the reason for that is the act of resistance to support our resistance fighters is to give hope to the people for eventual justice. Now, I know I harp on the same thing over and over again because it's very important. We must recognize that although Martin Luther King organized millions of people, the reality is, the rest of the history is, no people have beaten oppression through nonviolent resistance. And those who think that black people and the problem in America is different are merely having a pipe dream. And as I say over and over again, that doesn't mean that you have to join the IRA to support the Irish people, but you must support the members of the IRA. We are lied to constantly in America, and we talk about the end of apartheid in South Africa, apartheid South Africa. We constantly talk about the power of divestment. Let me say this in the new year, and let me be clear. Without the Cuban fighters in Africa fighting against United States, apartheid South Africa, and Israeli forces, Nelson Mandela would have died in jail. Let us be clear about that. But yet I hear people talking about the so-called, and one day we're going to have a program to talk about the so-called freedom of black South Africa and get into detail, talk about Winnie Mandela, what she represented, etc. But we're talking about projections in America. Well, here's one projection for you, and I stand behind it. America continues to intentionally talk about problems after the fact to solve the problem, which is built in failure. A relevant and timely example is the removal of an extremely superior, successful, and loved elementary school teacher in East Orange, New Jersey, name of Marilyn Zuniga, because of racist, oppressive political manipulation. And now, in that same state, that is New Jersey, right outside of the largest city in New Jersey, which is Newark, they are talking about how do we include more people of color in higher education. I'm sure you see the contradiction. If you remove the teachers in elementary school, how in the world are they going to be prepared for secondary school? They are not, and I will tell you, I am familiar with the subject. I started teaching in 1957 in Pittsburgh, and I see the same thing over and over and over again. We fight to educate our children, and at the risk of offending my brothers and sisters who work for liberation, I say, no community can be free or successful without jobs and education. And in New York and every other inner city, the only chance for jobs and education was the community control struggle. And I must be honest and criticize those who did not see that and still do not see it and oppose community control because it takes union jobs. Well, yes, it does. Because the unions were successful in making sure people of color never got in the unions. So jobs must be lost, but we are in a period where there is a great changeover. There must be a changeover of jobs from the old jobs to the new jobs. Another opportunity to integrate all societies into the economy. And when we have all people entered into the economy, there is a better chance for resistance than the 9% of organized labor in America. And so I would like to carry on this discussion a little later, but I would say that the American economy is coming to a very important point because we see the Democratic Party is going to try to hide their corporate support as opposed to support of the people. They have transposed this hoax over and over and over again. That is the Democratic Party, that they support the people, while at the same time supporting all the legislation for the corporations. It cannot be done. It's coming to a head. If we look around Europe and we see what's happening when they have their programs of supporting the rich corporations and opposing the people, there is a clash. And so, as the young, newly elected woman into Congress said, how is it that every time you talk about money for social spending, there's a great cry that goes out, where is the money going to come from? And at the same time, they have great spending for the military budget. And don't be confused about the military budget being of necessity for America, because the military budget is so full of holes and corruption that the military budget doesn't do what it's supposed to do. But people never ask, where is the money coming from? They just vote for it. They only question, where is the money coming from when you talk about programs for the poor? And they answer, we must have austerity and take more from the poor. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's coming to a head. Nancy Pelosi cannot get away with both things this time. And I hope you will be with us in the street supporting our political prisoners and those who understand what the government is all about. And we must be prepared to support those political prisoners to be, because America intentionally talks about problems after the fact. And another instance is the border. They went to South America, created dictatorships, took everything from the people, and then they say, what are we going to do about the people in at the border? Well, that's looking at the problem after the fact of the problem. Conduct of imperial powers must change, and we the people are the only ones who can change it. I've been given the hook, and I'm going to turn the phone back to Sister Betty. Or
all right, we're moving right along because the house is full and we've got several guest speakers. Normally we would take time for one of our poets, but before we do this, Brother Larry Pinkney is back, our Black Panther and our former political prisoner and one of those who liberated himself. And he is going to give us a little flashback in terms of the struggle that's going on for two of our very important political prisoners. Brother Larry Pinkney, welcome back, and your mic is open.
Thank you very much, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Thank everyone who's participating and/or listening to the program this evening. Let me be brief, since you did point out that there are lots of people. There's an article that I would draw everyone's attention to. The article was actually published way back in 2009. It is titled Leonard Peltier and Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Justice Barometers of Our Soul. The article can be found in a number of places, including on the Black Activist Writers Guild site, as well as still on Black Commentator. I just want to pick out a couple of excerpts from that article that I wrote those years ago. I've written many articles in support of both Leonard Peltier as well as Mumia, as well as numerous other political prisoners. But the point that I want to hone in on this evening very quickly is that in view of the interesting and hopefully very positive actions that have taken place thus far, and I'm talking judicially with respect to Mumia's case in specifically as relates to having his appeal rights restored, which is extremely important. I don't want anyone to think, though, that that means victory. It does not. It is a major step forward, but it does not mean absolute victory. There's so much more work that must be done, and it must be intensified. Leonard Peltier, who has been in prison now since 1976, and Brother Mumia in prison since 1981, December of 81, to be specific. Now, they represent only two, but two very important political prisoners. In 2009, I wrote in the article that I just gave you the title of, I want to just read an excerpt because I want to make this personal. We need to personalize this and understand why it is so very important. I said Leonard Peltier, this is a quote from the article, Leonard Peltier and Mumia Abdul-Jamal, however, are as much more, there's so much more than political prisoners in America. Now, why? These many decades of wrongful imprisonment represent the very heart and soul of the ongoing hypocrisy, the ongoing, racism, and the growing injustice in this nation. Mumia Abdul-Jamal and Leonard Peltier are not simply names to be bantered about. As with many other political prisoners, in this country, these two cases represent the collective barometer that indicate the utter and dismal failure of the judiciary and the policies of this nation to, quote, change, unquote, their ways and to come to their human senses. Mm-hmm. Leonard Peltier is a former head of the American Indian Movement, AIM. Brother Mumia Abdul-Jamal is a former leader in the Black Panther Party. Both have demonstrated the unmitigated audacity to stand up for unfettered justice, which is in reality the ultimate sin in this nation. They both were falsely accused of having killed police agents and or officers of repression, and they both had enormously crucial and important evidence suppressed by government prosecutors in their cases. I'm going to leave it at that. There's a great deal more in the article, but I'm hoping that the audience will personalize this. Think about it yourselves as how it relates to all of us. Again, the title of the article, and then I'm going to conclude. The title of the article is Leonard Peltier and Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Justice Barometers of Our Soul. All power to the people. Thank you very much. I'm going to continue to listen. I'm going to get off. Looking forward to hearing so much more. I'm looking forward to hearing Brother Nat Turner and Sister Ann Lamb and everybody else who will be participating in the show. Thank you. We must free our political prisoners. All power to the people.
All power.
All right. We want to thank Brother Larry Pinkney. And on our next announcement of our broadcast, our radio blog, we're going to include that link for our listening audience. And since we've got another Pinkney on board, I think we're going to try and find... Where is that other Pinkney? Yeah, we're looking for him right now, trying to open up his mic. Let's try this one and see if he's there. Reverend Pinkney?
Yes, Reverend Pinkney here.
Hey, Reverend Pinkney.
All right. Your mic is
there
open.
There you go. Hey, actually, it's an honor and a privilege to be here today. Sister Betty and my good brother Ralph and my good brother Larry, I tell you, we have had quite a I can't even tell you all the wonderful things that have happened within the last maybe 3-4 months. We put in for 24 commutations, 24, just attorney Tim Doman. And he's doing it for free. He's not charging not one dime. And 17 of the 24 was given a commutation. This is such a tremendous thing that here in the state of Michigan, this whole year, 51 has been given out for the year 2018, which is so incredible. One of my really good friends didn't make it, but we're not giving up on him. and we're going to fight for him. And these out of the 17 that's coming home, they have a total of over 500 years inside the prison system.
Wow.
It's such a amazing thing, and I'm excited just to even talk about it, because we don't get this opportunity too often. You don't get an attorney who's willing to do stuff for free, charge no money, and work this hard to get people home. And it's been such a tremendous experience for me, because I never thought that the government would even give someone a commutation. I didn't, we thought about it, we worked at it, but this guy, he convinced me that it can be done. And we've been very, very successful at it. I'm excited, and, you know, and we continue to do the things that need to be done. But also, I want to say for this year, this mayor who we put in office, we recalled the former mayor. Well, that was one of the reasons why I went to prison, because of the recall of this former mayor. The new mayor that we have put in have jumped ship on us. He's now working for Whirlpool Corporation. His name is Marcus Muhammad, someone who I would never believe in a million years would jump ship on us. And what he has done is so, matter of fact, he's like the last mayor on steroids. This guy is some of the stuff that they're doing is so incredible, but long as he supports the Whirlpool Corporation, he don't have to worry about going to jail and going to prison. And we've been working hard. We've been doing some incredible things, fighting for $15 per hour. We went out and got 400,000 signatures. And here's the deal. The Governor Snyder gutted it. We got it down to $12 an hour, but $12 an hour won't happen until 2030, which makes no sense to me. But we're still going to continue the things that need to be done, and just stay focused. This year is going to be a big year for all prisoners that has been in prison for a long period of time. I got a friend named Jerry Wilson who's been in prison for 45 years, and we're working now to get him out of there. We're doing some of the things that need to be done, and we're going to depend on the community to help us get these folks out, because they're coming home one way or the other. So we got a plan, and we're going to execute our plan, and we're going to make sure that this thing happens. Tomorrow morning, one of the guys who was given a parole, one of the person that we did was given a parole, but the prosecutor said no. He put in the paperwork to keep this young man from coming home to his family. He had been in prison for 42 years, and Attorney Tim Dolman, he's going to talk to him tomorrow morning, and we're going to see can we get him home within the next couple of months. So we're working, we're moving, not only in Benton Harbor, but around the state of Michigan. That's my goal, and we're just going to continue working, and you know, and the work that you know that you all are doing, Betty, Ralph, and the whole crew there. Hey, I got a lot of love and a lot of respect for y'all. Just keep up all the good work. I won't hold up y'all too much longer, because I know you got a lot of people on the line. But we're just going to keep working, keep fighting, keep standing, and do the things that need to be done, and keep it moving. I use the term, let's stick and move. Let's keep it moving. And on that note, I'll turn the phone back over to you, Betty.
Well, that, my dear friends and comrades, is revolutionary theology in action. When I first looked at Reverend Pinckney, when I first heard of our problem in Benton Harbor, Michigan, I said, you know, I got to get out there to participate in that. And wow, revolutionary theology in action, the rest of us have to imitate Reverend Pinckney. Thank you again, Reverend.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And I must add that this is the same problem we have with Mumia Abu-Jamal. The prosecutor needs to do to stall this issue is to appeal the decision the weasel word, half-hearted decision of the judge. If he appeals it, now we're looking at two or three more years of appeals. But we're going to hear more about that. Sister Ayanna.
Professor Louis, your mic is open.
Okay. Let me tell you guys a little story. Burning. The young bloods went in burning. There was no turning back, Jack, down at Broadway and Grand. They had their Jim Johnsons in their hand. In a heartbeat, Rover, it was over. No one called Jehovah. The blood ran red, but the gold had fled. The whistle was blown, but the money had flown. The roller showed, but everyone had blowed with a tremendous stash. Thousands in cash that didn't last too long. That was all spent and gone after getting it on for 3 solid weeks. Of big time freaks, 3 solid weeks of party that was much more than hearty. New music, new clothes, new treats to put up the nose, new girls, new smoke, new pills, new coke, but ah, the dues that had to be paid. The sure enough blues when you're not afraid of the trap that was laid, the cage that was made for animals but filled with men, gone to the pen. Some never gonna see the street again, buried alive in a hard rock jail, how to survive, no mail, no bail, buckets of tears, walled up for years, bricked up, tricked up, and sent up to die. Once the people could fly, but by and by, now it's clubs and chains, oceans of pain, wasted lives, piled one on top the other, once a month visit from your mother or brother, a living, breathing fatality in the hard, white hands of brutality, no family, no friends, no chance to make amends, nothing to defend, all coming to an end in the big house upstate, locked down behind iron gates in the cold steel jaws of the penitentiary, where we finally got to pause, cause it's elementary to know, fast or slow, when the young warriors feel the heat of the streets through their feet, feel the need to beat sometimes and not always lose, feel the blues rising under the skin, the news coming in, maybe we can win. Then now's the time to tell that we must study well the world around us, the darkness and power that surround us, trick bags shining in the sun, know well which way to run, know well which way to point the gun. If the weight must fall, and fall it must, don't let it fall right back on us. Before you dance out on the warpath in your trance or romance, better do the math. Before you step out with your truly righteous anger, don't be another headbanger in a bar, some little ripoff of Ma and Pa, a little run for the money that won't go far. Before you step out with your truly righteous hatred, don't let it be you who's got to pay for it. Lost in a world with nothing for you, there is always something that you can do. The children need you, and you know it's true. You can let the children judge you. Grandma down the block needs you a lot, and you could let the children judge you. Your brother needs you, what you're going to say, and you could let the children judge you. Your sister needs you every day, and you can let the children judge you. Your daddy needs you, don't throw it away, and you can let the children judge you. Your mama needs you in every single way, and you can let the children judge you. All the children, near and far, the children need you out of the bar. The children need you with or without a car. The children need you just like you are. And you can let the children judge you.
Wow. All right. Education, education, education. This is what we do. And in summation, the fact that this is where our young are is our fault. As I have said over the years, don't get rid of the guns. Teach them who and where to point them and for what. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Professor Louis.
All right, Ralph.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay.
Gil, your mic is open.
Hey, Gil.
Hi. So people have talked already about the situation with the appeal. I just wanted to add what people can do right now about the situation. First and foremost, people can call D.A. Krasner at 215-686-8000 and urge him not to appeal the decision. We don't know when he's going to decide, but we expect that to happen soon. So it's important that people call and let him know that we don't want him to appeal. The other thing people can do, because the legal part of this is going forward, and the lawyers are working on that, but if this was just about the evidence, Mumia would already be free. So we have to get people involved. We have to get the public energized. And so the best way people here in New York can get involved is this Saturday, January 12th at 3 p.m., there's going to be a presentation of the current situation at the People's Forum at 320 West 37th Street. That's 320 West 37th Street, the People's Forum at 3 p.m. this Saturday, January 12th. Among the speakers will be Pam Africa from the MOVE organization and the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal, Johanna Fernandez from the Campaign to Bring Mumia Home. She's a history professor at Baruch College. Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda Report, and Bob Boyle, who's Mumia's civil rights attorney. And the entire event's going to be emceed by Robin Spencer, who's also a history professor from Lehman College. So if people can make it there on Saturday afternoon to 37th Street, the People's Forum, that's the best way to learn the details of what's going on and to sign up to get involved, because it's going to take a massive effort to energize the public to put pressure on the legal system to do the right thing.
Got it. Well, I say be there, because those who are there, Pam Africa, will give us our marching orders, the long-distance fighter for the liberation of Mumia Jamal and the Mu Africa family. Thanks again for that, Gil.
Raymond Nat Turner, your mic is open.
Okay. Hey. Greetings, everyone. This piece is called 7-Year-Olds Dying in Third Reich Detention. Mm. Poppy, are we there? Are we almost there? Wide-eyed incantation of a child, 3 feet plus 60 pounds. Exodus leaving the lowland 6 days before birthday 7. Poppy, are we there? Are we almost there? Beaming birthday celebrant on the bus, munching an uncrushed pink frosted cookie from Poppy's beat up backpack. Poppy, are we there? Are we almost there? Her small soft hands celebrating heroics of an unshaven face, chasing dreams, dreams of pine tree scents and small gifts, compliments of magic of his hands before, dreams of the doll her mother promised before dying suddenly, dreams of asylum from violence, fleeing extractive capitalism suction tube tentacles. Poppy also had dreams of Jaybird, as he called her, teaching school and university with compassion and skill. She instructed stick dolls he'd crafted from fallen branches. Poppy, are we there? Are we almost there? Springing up and down on her invisible trampoline, Poppy's promises of a Christmas tree and celebration in California, in America, racing through her amazed and amazing mind. Poppy was proud. His back burned and ate. He clenched his teeth when she dozed off to sleep. His stomach growled, rattling sunken sides. He went without eating, so her belly would be full. He took tiny swigs of water so she'd have enough. Football fans who love players that play through pain, basketball fans who love players that create their own shots, just chasing dreams thousands of miles through government, gang-infested swamps, bad back, seven-year-old in tow, show up in your thicket of statistics and fantasy. Poppy, are we there? Are we almost there? To her, the bumpy ride, jarring dreams, juggling her belly up and down, was an adventure. And Poppy had prepared her for it. Bedtime stories where everyone lived happily ever after. Arriving at the border, swarming with uniformed thugs, three-fifths human, igloos pumping raw sewage through veins, whistling Dixie, prying Poppy and Jaybird apart. Her forehead, a 105-degree radiator, body spasming, eyes rolling round in their sockets, tummy evicting food Poppy fed her, terrorist tricks to breach the border, enter the U.S., as were delirious, distorted, slow motion last words. Poppy, are we there? Are we almost there?
Well, poetry, as Lynn Stewart says it, can tell us things in a way that nothing else can. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Education, 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 feeling that it doesn't matter, and if it doesn't, you do something. Sister Ayanna.
Sister Ann Lamb, in the spirit of Nelson Mandela and New York City Jericho, your mic is open.
Oh, thank you so much. Always an honor to be with this wonderful group of people. Have some good news, or cautiously good news, regarding Brother Leonard Peltier. He was told that his case manager has submitted his request for a transfer. That happened on January 2nd. He's cautiously excited and felt his transfer could happen within a few months, but he didn't rule out the fact that his transfer might have to be fought in the courts. We put together this information for you to send letters of support for Leonard's transfer. There are suggested letters as well as points of information should you care to write your own letter. Thank you for your support, and if you get a return reply, we would appreciate it if you would share it with us. Sincerely, International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee Board and National Office. If you go to whoisleonardpeltier.info, the information is there. He is had requested this transfer from Coleman to Oxford, Wisconsin. And one of the reasons he wants to do that is he will be 1,300 miles closer to his home and family. And he'll also be closer to Native communities who are related to him. And he will also be close to the Mayo Clinic and the Federal Medical Clinic in Rochester because he has multiple medical issues. So I would say that everybody who can should go to whoisleonardpeltier.info. Get the information. There's two sample letters you can use, or at least points, and then you can write your own letter. This is really important. You know, we heard Larry already talking about Leonard before and Mumia, so we know, you know, Leonard is totally innocent. He's been in prison for a long, long time. He's old. He's not young. And he would really dearly love to be closer to his people. Of course, he would love to come home. Also, this Oxford is a medium, so that would really be a good thing. So that's very important, and I would encourage everybody to do that. The Nelson Mandela campaign will have our next meeting this coming Saturday. Lots of things happening on Saturday from noon to 3 at the Solidarity Center at 147 West 24th Street, second floor. That's 147 West 24th Street, second floor. So if anybody would like to attend, that would be a wonderful thing. This is a very serious international campaign. We are trying to get the International Commission of Jurists, who were here way back when in 1979, to come back and to interview U.S. political prisoners and to write a report, as they did in the past. And that report can be read at spiritofmandela.org. And very interestingly, they visited some people who are still in prison now. They visited Sundiata Kolhe. They could come back now and visit Sundiata Kolhe at the age of 82, still sitting in prison. So it's very important, you know, we want to put some heat internationally in terms of what's going on with our political prisoners. People are not doing well. I just heard from Pam Hanna that Kamau Siddiqui is in the hospital. I can't give you more information right now because we do not have it. She is trying to find out. His legal team is looking into what's going on. You know, he did have the problem with his foot. Then we were told it was his feet. But I don't know if this is something related or something different. So this is something that we'll be reporting on and letting people know. As soon as we get the information, we'll be putting it out there. So that's something to think about. You know, our political prisoners, many of them are older now. They have a lot of different medical problems. Our brother Kojo, also known as Grayling Brown in the federal system, he had a major, major high blood pressure incident right around Christmas. He was in the hospital. They thought he was going to die. He asked for an imam. It took them a couple of days to get his blood pressure down. He's back in his cell. He's on bed rest. You know, so these kind of things are happening all the time. And not just with our political prisoners, all prisoners, you know, are denied medical care and all kinds of horrible things happen to everybody. I was just reading a thing about what the shutdown has done and the chaos it is causing in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So that's, you know, really horrible. And it's a disaster from what I'm reading. And I would say people take the time. If you're on an E-list, you've gotten it. If not, you can go to themarshallproject.org. And you will find this article. It is really excellent. So, you know, these kind of things are going on all the time, and we need to pay attention. Like I agree with what Ralph said before, you know, you don't have to give up your guns. Just learn how to point them in the proper direction. Okay? So many of our people who did point their guns in the proper direction back in the day are still sitting in prison now. As witnessed Jaleel Muntakim in his 47th year, almost 48 years of imprisonment since the age of 19, was recently turned down on his 10th parole appeal. We are working on strategizing around that, and there will be next steps. And as soon as we are able to meet with him and have a conversation and so on and so forth and meet with other people around him, because he does have a lot of supporters all over the world, then we will put out what our plans are for his parole appeal, which he will be doing an administrative appeal as soon as he gets a transcript. And, of course, we will be supporting him. So that's something you can always check out on jerichoandy.org. As I say, that's upcoming. So we got to remember to, what's the call, as we say? Free them all, and all power to the people.
Thank you so much for that, Ann. And now we have something to do. We have a candidate running for a Democrat on the Democratic Party ticket supporting our position of freeing political prisoners and community. Gwen Goodwin, your mic is open. Hang in there, Tom.
Hi, guys. So this is Gwen, and I have not withdrawn from this race, but I'm very close to it. And I'm sorry to say that, but without an awful lot of support, it's very hard to get these petitions done, 3,750 signatures. And it's just not happening with the people power that I need. And so I don't know that it's possible to I make that number by this coming Monday, which is today. So it could be done, but it could not be done without a lot of very centered work, you know, really coming to the table and putting our nose to the grindstone. And I'm sad because I really did want to be able to represent this position, especially since I've been through so much in this very short time in this campaign, because I have experienced so many strange things happening, from being shunned at meetings. I'm one of 17 candidates, so I can't really imagine that I couldn't have imagined that it would be that important to repress what it is I have to say. But each one of these meetings that happens, I have not been invited to. Some of them we went to, and I was not allowed to speak, only to say my name, and then to be quickly gotten off the stage as if I was, going to give everybody the flu. But on top of it, it's all the strange things that are happening with my phone. And I'm pretty sure I never talked to any of you about things happening on my phones or emails because it wasn't, as far as I knew, and it wasn't so blatantly happening, but it's so blatantly happening right now. And so many strange things that it's just, it's a very strange world that we're living in. I know that every one of you has experienced some kind of taunting by the government, harassment, having your own phone bugged. We've had murders happen, political people, political prisoners. But I think the difference, at least for me now, is they are so overt in what they do. It's they just really don't care about letting you know that the device that you carry with you is just like, it's just like a monitor. It's like an ankle bracelet. They know everything you're doing. They're listening to everything. I had the strangest experiences. I was just Googling who was on the list of candidates, and Wikipedia list came up. A lot of people think Wikipedia is just like going to, you know, your dictionary to get facts, but I know that they're not, because I have heard Gary Noll talk extensively on how they censor things. However, I've never had any interaction with them at all. And the other day when my name wasn't on there, they have an edit button. I pushed the edit button to try to add my name. And when I did that, it said I was banned from Wikipedia for 3 months. Well, 3 months is about when this election is over. So my sister offered to do it for me, go on, and she also was told that she was banned from this website. So we couldn't get anything on. Then finally, my little sister, who does not have our name, was able to get on. She wrote a paragraph about me, but posted it, and it did not make it. However, today when I was speaking on the phone about the possibility of withdrawing and even probably withdrawing, all of a sudden that Wikipedia paragraph came up, and it was like the water began to flow back on the internet again about who I was, as long as I would cooperate and step down, not do anything like run for this office. So I don't know. Some of you all have conversations with afterwards, and I'm sorry to deliver that as bad news, but I really, to me personally, by myself, to go out and get 33,700 signatures is really physically impossible. It really takes a team lift. And I think when Joel and I discussed this in the beginning, we did not realize that it would be such a short period of time that they would give you to get that amount of signatures. Because normally the cycle is 21 days, and the signatures are 400 for a local seat. So 12 days for 3,750 is a lot. And I guess you all know this already, but I'll just underline it by telling you, it just shows the blatantness of this being a pay-to-play game. Because unfortunately, really, the person who has the most amount of money here is Melissa Marc-Viverito. She has already, I think, gone through $100,000 in the amount of money she's been paying to have all these, you know, people helping her and lots and lots of people getting petitions for her. And it just is very sad that we can't have anybody that's, like, elected from a Democratic position. You can't – we don't live in a democracy. We live in the shell of a democracy, mostly right now, you know, as with a dictatorship at the top. But it's very, very sad, because unless you come to the table with that kind of money, or you've decided to be part of these roughhouse clubs, these Democratic clubs, where they are like gigantic cliques from high school, very nasty, they play hardball. At least that's been my experience so far. Tricks, I mean, I did a wonderful forum, and Ralph saw this first forum, and unfortunately the next day everyone's picture was shown on the internet, and my picture was cut out. The only thing you could see was a little piece of my shirt and a little piece of my elbow. And that is because I opened by telling the people in the audience that with the conversation or the question was about police brutality. And after all the candidates, as they usually do, talk about their own interactions with the police, I decided to open up the scope and just tell people that we actually live in a police state. when every single day of the year a black man gets killed in this country with impunity, where the police can go out and kill somebody with impunity, not get punished, you're already living in a police state. You're not going there, you're there. And I don't know. I thought that was a good way, a very open way of describing where we're at right now in our United States. But I guess it didn't go over so well on hindsight. But anyway,
when I was there, you got a greater response than anyone else, and that's why they made sure that it would be super
right.
difficult for you to get on the ballot. And about cropping, and you were not on the end. They cropped you out of the middle. And so,
right.
yes, there is, you know, a concerted effort to keep anybody of decency off the ballot.
Very scary. And I just want to add just very quickly, Ralph, is I just want people to realize that it's not just these groups, it's the enormous power. It has to be from the federal government of going into your telephone and changing things on the internet and changing information or suppressing information on the internet. And how I always consider myself a very small candidate in the realm of things. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a band of people behind me. So why would it be so important to do these things? But it is that important to them. They are very, very focused. Anybody that's going to say anything that's going to give the people the truth is going to be suppressed.
Well, your idea
you know what?
Is the important thing. And I don't want to cut you off, but I want to give Tom a few moments to tell us what he has observed and what we are to expect from the new year. Hang in there, Gwen. Tom, mic is open.
Hi, everyone. I wish everybody a happy and healthy new year. Brother Ralph talked about at the beginning of the program about the ongoing racism in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw a film that I recommend to everybody. It's called The Green Book. It's based upon a true story, and it takes place in 1962, during the period where segregation was in full force in the South. And so what happens if a famous black entertainer is invited to perform someplace in a southern segregated state, in which they were, but they were not able to stay at the place, and say it was at a famous hotel. They were not able to stay there. They were not able to eat at that hotel. So they had this guide called the Green Book, which gave a list of black hotels and restaurants that they had to go to. And that's what this movie was about. It's called The Green Book. Right now it's playing at the Louise 68th on movie complex on Broadway. And I highly recommend this film. And maybe we can talk about it next week on the blog.
Well, very good, because there is information, and I always say you have to go to a movie way out of the way or stay up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and every now and then they'll put something of value educationally on the airwaves to make it accessible for many people to see. Sister Betty.
As someone who lived with the Green Book as a child when we went south, I can testify that the Green Book is a true historical reality. And we're going back to that now. Anytime you can be shot, anytime, anywhere by a cop, even a Green Book won't save you. And as for the projections for the new year, our projections had better be that if Mumia doesn't get out, that no Democrat gets in.
Thank you so much for that. And we must emulate Reverend Pinckney with revolutionary theology. We must pass these successes on to the people, and we must continue the struggle. The struggle
say them loud, say them clear for the whole.